This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hour number two, Wednesday edition, Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio. Tony D off on vacation. John Stashower in with Ron Culver. We've been talking about the Suns' Game 2 win over the Clippers. Another terrific NBA playoff game last night. This was a tight game right throughout. Obviously, these are two very evenly matched teams, and they're both playing not at full strength. But as we've talked about, it's pretty much a wash when you have the Suns playing without Chris Paul and the Clippers playing without Kawhi Leonard. And if Paul George makes a free throw or two with 8 seconds to go, we're having a completely different conversation this morning, because then it would be 1-1 and the Clippers would have home court. And George missed them both with 8 seconds to go. And with less than a second on the clock, the Suns from the corner inbounded with a alley-oop pass thrown by Jay Crowder, a perfectly thrown pass and a perfect execution by DeAndre Ayton to dunk in the game winner. And the Suns do it again. That's 9 wins in a row. This team won 19 games all of the 2018-19 season, and they've won 9 in a row in the postseason. Remember, they were down 2-1 to the Lakers and won 3 straight, swept the Nuggets, up 2-0 on the Clippers, and here are the Phoenix Suns, who hadn't even been in the playoffs since 2010, have never won a championship, only twice have they made it to the finals in their history, and they're now up 2-0, heading to L.A. with the likelihood that Chris Paul is going to return, if not for Game 3, then maybe for Game 4. I mean, he was in COVID protocol, you would think. You know, from all accounts, he hasn't had any symptoms, and so presumably they're going to, you know, have enough negative tests where he can get back on the floor, whereas Kawhi Leonard has a knee injury and doesn't sound like he's coming back. So it looks good for the Suns to get to the NBA Finals. We'll see what happens when they get to L.A., and the East Finals start tonight with Atlanta and Milwaukee. Oh, by the way, the Detroit Pistons won the lottery last night. Not a lot of interest. I mean, Cale Cunningham, the kid from Oklahoma State's the likely first overall pick. Not necessarily a franchise-changing player, but Pistons did get the lottery victory last night. Best tight ends in the world all together. One is not invited. We'll talk about that coming up next. Stay with us.
Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's John Stashower.
All right, good to have you with us on this Wednesday morning. So I thought I was pretty familiar with most colleges and universities around this country, but here's one I had not heard of, and that is Tight End University. Ronnie, hear about this? The best tight ends in the world have gathered.
Okay.
In Nashville, Tennessee. George Kittle, obviously 49ers star tight end, put this thing together, a three-day retreat so his fellow NFL tight ends can hone their craft and bond with another. Kittle said, "I'm big on brotherhood. A lot of these guys either don't know each other or never communicated with each other. It bothers me." He's got over 50 tight ends that are right now in Nashville where Kittle lives in the offseason. It's a who's who of tight ends. Travis Kelce, Greg Olsen, who just retired, Darren Waller, Mark Andrews, Zach Ertz, Evan Engram, Noah Fant, Austin Hooper, Kyle Rudolph, Mike Gesicki, Johnny Smith, Tyler Igby. I mean, on and on and on. And Kittle really pressured. If he didn't hear from guys, he pressured them, and they all decided to come. And I guess they have done this, maybe not to this extent. Lane Johnson of the Eagles, I guess, had a similar kind of thing for offensive linemen, and Von Miller has put together somewhat of a similar thing in Las Vegas for edge rushers. But this seems to be very well coordinated by George Kittle. I guess they do some drills. They have some conversations. Do you think maybe, Ron, that maybe there might be an alcoholic beverage or to consume
No.
at some point in the next 3 days here?
Not at these social gatherings.
No. It's all serious. It's all, I mean, it's 3 days of tight end talk. I mean, can you fill 3 days with just, hey, what do you do? What do you do on a strong
well,
side?
Well, that was the first thing I was thinking of. Is he bringing them all in to gain their secrets?
Yeah.
To become, you know, to hone their powers and become the ultimate tight end?
Well, you're right. And again, it seems like every time I say something, I have to, like, do the catchphrase back in my day kind of thing. But, you know, I used to be, there wasn't so much fraternizing, right, with opposing players. That's something that didn't used to happen. And now I don't have a problem with it. I mean, I think these guys try to win. They want to win. Once the game starts, they're not, you know, buddy-buddy, all, you know, in the off season. I don't have a problem with it. I just found it stunning. I didn't know that the other stuff happened, but, you know, tight end is it's a small fraternity. And the fact that he got everybody to come to this thing in during a time, you know, when there's no mini camp, I mean, this is a time when players can relax and do whatever they want, go on vacation. They are all in Nashville. Oh, by the way, Ron, there's one tight end who's not there.
Yeah, I just saw that now, and that's kind of a bummer.
Here's the thing. He's never played tight end, but he is technically a tight end on an NFL roster as of now, and that would be Tim Tebow. And I mention this because you just in passing, I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before, somehow Tim Tebow's name came up, and I think I said, well, you know, we don't know if he's going to make the team in Jacksonville. And you said, oh, he's going to make the team.
I think I do. I think he'll make the team. Whether it's worthy or not, I'm not saying that. I think he will be on the 53-man roster.
And you have a problem with that. There are those who say, oh, this is a sideshow. This is a way to just, you know, give the Jaguars some attention. He's taking a job away from someone more worthy.
I don't know. I mean, is he taking something away from? I mean, he picked a position where there are a lot of teams now who are carrying two or three tight ends, and that third tight end. I mean, he could be better than that third tight end that for that team. I'm not saying, you know, he's better than all the other tight ends in the league, but for the Jaguars, he could be there, and he brings a lot to the table. He brings a comfort level to Urban Meyer. I mean that so. I don't know if a head coach really needs that, but it seems like Urban Meyer always needs to have a security blanket because of the way he always quits his teams. And I mean, the guy is an athlete. I wrote him off as a baseball player from the very beginning, thought that was a complete sideshow until had he not broken his wrist, he probably would have been called up to the major leagues.
Yeah.
About 2-3 years ago now?
Yeah.
Because the Mets were terrible. Why not take a flyer on a late September call-up? Tebow probably would have been that player. He was playing great. And so why should I assume that he can't play the tight end position?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you, and I think we're in the minority. Everybody a lot of people have been very critical of this thing. There's a lot of people who love to, you know, take shots at Tim Tebow. Look, he was not a good NFL quarterback. I mean, there's no way you can say that he was. He had this ridiculous season in Denver where they kept winning, and it wasn't because of him. It was almost in spite of him. I remember there was a game where he completed two passes the entire game, but one of them was like a 50-yard touchdown, and they won the game. Remember, they won that playoff game against the Steelers.
Yeah.
He hadn't done anything all day, and then he threw a long touchdown pass to the various times.
One play.
It was a really weird situation, and the Broncos were right to move on from him when they got a chance to get Peyton Manning. You're not going to not get Peyton Manning because you have Tim Tebow. So I'm not as much against this as others. And like you said, like, you know, every team probably has three tight ends. So that's 96 guys who make a career as a tight end. You know, so he might be taking a job from the 96th best tight end. Okay, fine. You know, don't be the 96th tight end. You'll get a job. I can't feel sorry for that. And he is a tremendous athlete. And when he came out from Florida, you know, I did a lot of radio shows with Mel Kiper, and he always said I would draft him as a, you know, he used to call it an H-back, you know, because he could run. He's a great runner, great athlete, and that would be a perfect position for him, which is similar, I guess, to tight end. Now, that was a long time ago. He's a lot older now. He hasn't played in the NFL since 2012. So I don't know.
No, but quite honestly, if you were drafting Tebow straight out of college now, you would probably use him similarly that you use Taysom Hill.
Right.
You know, someone that you can put under center and make plays happen every once in a while, but use him out on the wing. And I think the Jaguars are going to be doing that. I don't know how effective he's going to be at that. Like you said, I mean, he is over 30. I'm not trying to say that's old, but it is in football terms.
Sure. Because we haven't played in so long.
Yeah. And, you know, but if he could be effective in that sense, in that way of becoming a Taysom Hill-esque player.
Now, Tebow, back in the day when he was coming out and just starting, he always told everyone he didn't want to do that. He didn't want to be Taysom Hill.
He was a quarterback.
He wanted to be a quarterback. He believed in his ability as a quarterback. And obviously he was a great college quarterback, but that doesn't always translate. He had issues with his throwing style and all that and the form, and he was not, you know, a textbook passer. And we saw that. Had he bought into, you know, the idea of being a Taysom Hill back in the day, that might have worked out nicely for him, but I think he didn't want to do it. And so teams, you know, for the most part, stayed away from him. And remember, he got his chances. He was in a training camp with Philadelphia and with New England as well. So it just didn't work out for him as a quarterback. We'll see what happens. I'm not convinced he's going to make the team. Just because you sign a guy and say he's going to be in training camp, this is the NFL. That doesn't mean you've got some kind of guaranteed contract. So we'll see. He's going to get a chance, you know, and if he shows he's got some ability, then I don't have a problem with it. Obviously, there's the relationship he had with Urban Meyer. Jacksonville is his hometown. So there is some of that where maybe the Jaguars are thinking, boy, this will make it would be a heck of a story. You imagine Tim Tebow, you know, catching a big touchdown pass from Trevor Lawrence.
I honestly have no basis for this thought, but I think we're going to see that this to the point where it's almost like, you know, when you're building your fantasy football team, Tebow might be late in the rounds after you've picked your kicker.
Well, here's the thing, you know, you'd get maybe some running yards, and could you not see this, the Jaguars in the red zone inside the 5-yard line, and here comes Tim Tebow.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, taking a snap, making one of those jump passes that he used to make at Florida, or, you know, running it in. Absolutely.
Listen, we all know he would not get this opportunity if it wasn't for Urban Meyer. Yep. There's no way. And Tebow wouldn't even probably be seeking this opportunity had not Urban Meyer decided to coach in the NFL. But because of all the stars have aligned, because it's Jacksonville, because it's, you know, everything kind of fits perfectly for Tebow, that's why I'm saying Tebow's going to make the NFL roster. I don't know if it's worthy or not, but and you know, and it's past that prime. I'm not looking at this as from ownership saying, hey, this is a way to sell tickets to the Jacksonville faithful. I think you got Trevor Lawrence. If you can't sell tickets because you got Trevor Lawrence, your team's in big trouble. But I think Tebow is just that wild card factor that could make it a little more interesting. I don't know.
And, you know, I've heard the word, I said it the other day, it's the most overused word, distraction. Oh, this will be a distraction. No, it won't. That's silly. If he shows you something in training camp and in the preseason, I think you're right. I think he'll be on the team. And at some point, you're right. It's one of those stories that's almost too good to not actually happen, that at some point he's going to, like, score a touchdown or run in for a touchdown in a big spot. But he's not at tight end university. And I don't blame him. He's not. These are the guys who have proven themselves as tight end. They're the ones at tight end university. Maybe next year Tim gets to.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about proven. I mean, Kyle Pitts has proven himself at the college level. He hasn't proven himself in the NFL yet.
Yeah,
then he got the invite.
He's got a little more upside than Tim Tebow.
Yeah, that's very true.
It was a fourth pick in the draft or whatever the hell he was. All right, I'll take a break. We got to do some baseball. Max Scherzer got tested for sticky stuff last night. Not once, not twice, three times. Not happy about it. We'll talk about it next. Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's John Stashower.
We'll talk to Chris Sheridan. He covers the NBA. He's going to join us coming up here on Sports Map Radio. Lots to get to with him. The Suns are up 2-0 on the Clippers. The Hawks and Bucks are playing tonight in Milwaukee. Detroit won the lottery. Six teams are looking for a new coach. Sixers might be trading Ben Simmons, so lots to get to with Chris coming up. We've got to talk some baseball, Ron. We are just 2 days into this crackdown by Major League Baseball on pitchers using the sticky stuff, and we got some controversy because Max Scherzer was on the mound for the Nationals last night against the Phillies, and the umpires checked him, I guess, after the first inning, the third inning, and the fourth inning. And the last one was basically at the urging of the Phillies manager, Joe Girardi, who didn't like what he saw when Scherzer took his hat off and ran his hand through his hair. Here's Scherzer.
Obviously, Girardi, for me, it's, kind of confusing. If you watch the bomb at bat, I almost put a 95 mile an hour fastball on his head because the ball slipped out of my hand. The whole night I was sick of kind of licking my fingers and tasting rosin the whole night. So the only part, I couldn't even get sweat from the back of my head because it wasn't really a warm night. So for me, the only part that was sweaty on me was actually my hair. So I had to take off my hat to be able to try to get any type of, try to get some type of moisture on my hand to try to, mix with the rosin.
So, again, he almost hit Bum with a pitch, and he says because he couldn't grip the ball. Girardi was insinuating that Scherzer was doing something, and he kind of insisted on that third time for the umpires to check Scherzer for the sticky stuff. Here was Girardi after the game.
I've seen Max a long time, since 2010. Obviously, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. But I've never seen him wipe his head like he was doing tonight, ever. Going like this, right? So it was suspicious for me. He did it about four or five times. It was suspicious. I didn't mean to offend anyone. I just got to do what's right for our club.
Here's the opposing manager, Washington's Davey Martinez.
I thought the umpires did a good job with it. I really did. I mean, it's part of the game now, and they did that due diligence. So as far as Joe's concerned, I think he's got to answer the tough questions about that. I don't need to answer that. So bottom line is, we went 1-0 today. Boys came out and played. They kept their composure. We finished the game, and it was a good win for us. So we're just going to come back tomorrow and go 1-0 tomorrow.
All right, Ron, sticky stuff. Here we go. It's not necessarily a bad thing for baseball, I don't think, to have a little bit of a controversy here. To talk about this, it gets people talking about baseball. Sometimes you need a reason to talk about baseball these days. There are a lot of these shows that you see, and they never talk about baseball. So we're talking about it here. We're a couple days, Gerrit Cole wasn't thrilled that he got, checked. I would go with Jacob DeGrom's reaction on Monday when he got checked. He laughed. Umpire, he showed him the hat, showed him the glove, unbuckled his belt. He was laughing. His catcher was laughing. He had nothing to worry about. We have not had a situation, and I don't think we're going to have one, where an umpire checks the pitcher and finds something because they all know it's coming. It's not going to be like the Naked Gun where he comes out to the mound, finds the sandpaper or anything like that. So maybe this story just goes away, but I guess it's not surprising that here, just a couple days in, we had a situation like we had last night with Max Scherzer.
Yeah, I mean, I know the umpires have been told to do this. They're, this is part of their job criteria now. It's so stupid. Yeah, I mean, it is just, it's like going and, putting a bunch of guys on the line, you see in cop movies and cop TV shows, and they're all lined up, which one did it? And just going up like, hey, did you steal that banana from that grocery store? And the guy just finally going, yeah, it was me. You're not going to have it. There's not going to be any evidence of the banana. There's not going to be any evidence anywhere. He's not going to have banana still chewing in his mouth. But that's kind of what we're doing here, right? I mean, these guys know they're going to get checked. They know they're going to get checked after the first inning. Max Scherzer has every right to be upset. You know, where he got checked once. Okay, fine. You know, maybe he brought something out. Then you're checking a mid-inning. Joe Girardi was doing that as a baseball move to try to get him out of his rhythm because Max Scherzer was dealing.
Yeah.
And that, if I'm the pitcher, that makes me upset. That makes me mad because I'm trying to get into a groove. I'm trying to settle. I'm sorry your guys can't hit me. They need to train better. But it's not my fault that I'm pitching well. I mean, Max Scherzer said, you know, yeah, he was tired of licking rosin. He licks his hands all the time. Like, if he has sticky stuff on his hands, he's not going to be licking his fingers.
Yeah, now you make a good point about the mid. It's not supposed to be done mid-inning. It's supposed to be done as they walk off at the end of the inning.
Yeah.
So
and the third and that, time was, I mean.
Three times in four innings seems a bit excessive. But, you know, as Martinez said, look, the Nationals got the last laugh. They won the game. And you're right, Girardi, maybe a little gamesmanship, which is part of baseball and all that. I think you know, a week from now or a couple weeks from now, we're not even talking about this.
Yeah, I think the umpires, maybe they revolt. Maybe Manfred comes out off his pedestal or whatever it is that he's sitting on right now and goes, oh, you know, maybe we don't need to do this. It was a bad idea.
Well, especially midseason. You know, like if you had some foresight, you know, you have to be aware of things that are going on in your sport. So you would have thought that this stuff, that they would have known about this not in June, but in the offseason, then maybe you can address it. But to do it in the midseason seems
odd. They've known about it. I mean, they know everyone is trying to get an edge on something. I mean, there's no shock, there's no surprise that everyone is trying to, you know, do something. Just come up with a universal substance that everyone can agree upon and say, just use this, and this is all that you can use. Like the rosin bag. I mean, you know, there was probably a point in time where using chalk to kind of dry out your hands a little bit was considered illegal. You know, it's just, I mean, it reminds me, you know, the pine tar thing too. Like, oh, it's too far up the bat. I mean, it just, you're looking at, you can look at it one of two ways, right? Are they gaining competitive edge? Sure. But at the same time, they're also doing it for safety reasons. I mean, you heard Scherzer say that in the video. It was like, you know, his hands were getting sweaty. He almost threw a 95 mile per hour fastball at someone's head. You know, that to me would be more dangerous than, oh, look, he threw a curveball where the spin rate was higher than normal.
Never even used to hear about spin rate. Yeah. Meanwhile, some things going on around the big leagues. First of all, this kid, Wander Franco, he's the next big thing in baseball. He's the next, whatever, Fernando Tatis or Ronald Acuna or Vladimir Guerrero. At 20 years old, he dropped out of school in the sixth grade just to focus on playing baseball. And he makes his major league debut last night for Tampa Bay, hits a three-run homer in his third at-bat. So everyone says this is the next, you know, superstar. So he's off to a running start. Meanwhile, the Rays lost in 11 innings. The Red Sox, they've lost seven in a row. The White Sox have lost five in a row. So the Rays trail the Red Sox by a game and a half. The White Sox currently are only two games up on Cleveland. Meanwhile, the Astros have won nine in a row. You're Houston Astros, Ron. Well, no, I know you're not an Astros fan.
I'm not an Astros fan.
You live there. And they've gone up one game on Oakland, which is interesting because I think you're looking at maybe the AL West getting a wild card team with both those teams playing well, which you didn't necessarily think was going to happen when the season started, which means the Yankees, who lost again last night, they are in third place. They might be on the outside looking in for the playoffs because they're in third place. They may not get a wild card because one of those wild cards might come from the AL West. San Diego's won six in a row. Sellout crowd last night. They beat the Dodgers. Blake Snell beat Clayton Kershaw. I remember Snell faced the Dodgers in the World Series, got taken out. Both teams are trailing the Giants, who in a stunner have the best record in baseball, 47-26. Chris Sheridan's next. We'll talk about the NBA. Lots to get to with him. Stay with us. I'm John Stashower at Sports Map Radio.
is the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's John Stashower.
Okay, we're going to get some NBA talk very shortly with Chris Sheridan, basketballnews.com. By the way, the hockey last night, Montreal won 4-1 at Vegas. Montreal Canadiens, who have the most storied franchise in the league, in the history, but they haven't been played in the Stanley Cup Finals since 1993. They're up 3-2 going back to Montreal for Game 6. Tampa Bay is up 3-2 on the Islanders. There's Game 6 tonight. This is very likely the last game ever at the Nassau Coliseum, where the Islanders have been playing since 1972. They're moving to a new arena next year. Now, they could win Game 6 and Game 7 at Tampa Bay, but that's unlikely. The Lightning, defending Stanley Cup champs, and, you know, they're on their way maybe to winning another. So that's what the situation in hockey. But we've been talking about the NBA. Dramatic win for the Suns last night on the DeAndre Ayton dunk with less than a second to go. Let's welcome back to Sports Map Radio Chris Sheridan, longtime NBA scribe, basketballnews.com. And Chris, it certainly appears as if the Suns are going to the NBA Finals, and I'm trying to think of it's unusual, right, for a team to kind of come out of nowhere. I know they made some strides last year in the bubble, but they haven't been to the playoffs in 11 years. And to have a team go from that to making the finals doesn't happen. How unusual is that in the NBA?
It's completely unusual, Stash. By the way, thanks for having me on. You're right. They went 8-0 in the bubble last year. But anybody who paid really close attention to the NBA this year could see this team's damn good. DeAndre Ayton is one of the best big men out there. We saw the execution on that game winning dunk last night. That was one of the greatest passes you'll ever see coming from Jay Crowder. So, I would caution you, don't count these Clippers out. Now, they were down 3-2 against Dallas, and they came back and they won 6-7. And they were down 2-0 against Utah, and then they came back and won the next two. And that included the biggest second-half comeback in NBA history. Look, the Clippers, count them out at your own peril, Stash. They're down, like you said, they're down 0-2. They're 1-point underdogs at home for Game 3, but if they get Kawhi Leonard back, they're a different team. And, you know, Paul George played his heart out last night, but he missed two big free throws late, and that allowed, what happened to happen. Because if Paul George makes those two free throws, we're talking about a game that went to overtime.
Well, you're right. And the Clippers, it's impressive what they've done. We'll see what happens if they can do it again. Regardless, the Clippers have never been to the NBA Finals. You know, they've never even been this point. And you have an East Series starting tonight that's unlikely with teams that we're not used to seeing, Atlanta and Milwaukee. Is this good, Chris, for the NBA? New teams, fresh blood than what we normally see year after year?
Yeah, I mean, in the East, Dash, you got superstar power with Trae Young playing for Atlanta, and of course with Giannis playing for the Bucks. And look, Chris Middleton is a known commodity. He played very, very confidently against Brooklyn. Drew Holiday's one of the best defenders in the league. So we'll kind of see how that one plays out. But I think this should end for a long time. All talk that the NBA fixes these games because they don't want to have two small market teams in the playoffs. Well, not that Atlanta's a small market, because it's not, but Milwaukee certainly is. But, you know, let's see how the Bucks handle their moment, because they did play with a lot of poise and resiliency against the Brooklyn Nets. And then the big thing with Atlanta is Trae Young, he seems to play better on the road than he does at home. So I'm really interested to see if the Hawks can pull off a stunner tonight in Game 1. It wouldn't be the first time. They did it at Madison Square Garden back in the first round.
Yeah, of course, both teams come off the Game 7 wins on the road, with the Bucks winning the overtime game in Brooklyn and then Atlanta winning that Game 7 in Philadelphia, which still has people talking, Chris. You know, that image of Ben Simmons in the fourth quarter driving along the baseline and seemingly passing up an easy dunk and just afraid to make take a shot and passing the ball, and now all the talk about Ben Simmons is through in Philadelphia. He's done. He's going to get traded. And some of the rumors, and I think they're just rumors at this point, have surprised me in terms of how much the Sixers would get back. I don't know that the Sixers would get that much back for a guy that looked so poorly and so not confident of himself. Do you think the Sixers, if they do start to talk to teams about a trade for Simmons, would be able to get much back for him at this point?
Well, you're going to get a lot back salary cap wise because of Ben's salary, which is up around $33 million. And are you going to get back equal talent? That's really hard to say. Ben is an outstanding rebounder, an outstanding defender. He just doesn't put the work in on a shot, and that's why he wasn't guarded in the last series. They just leave him alone, and he wouldn't take a shot. He really looked like he was a deer in the headlights there in the final game in the fourth quarter against Atlanta. So I think the first thing that the Sixers do is they try to secure a commitment from Simmons that he's going to work on his game in the offseason. And if they can get that, and if they can monitor that and figure out whether he is taking, 1,000 jump shots a day, mid-rangers and three-pointers, and putting in the work that he's kind of put off over the years, then I think, they keep him. They're inclined to keep him because his value is down. But if look, the fans in Philly were burning his jersey after that game against the Hawks, so he may have won. Well, never underestimate the fans in Jersey to do or in Philly or South Jersey to do something, a little outrageous. But look, if Daryl Morey comes to the conclusion that he's better off without him than with him, then yeah, I think they're going to move him. Now, what do they get back? That remains to be seen. Maybe they can get back Kemba Walker or John Wall if they send him to Oklahoma City or to Houston. Would that be the absolute worst thing? And, either for Ben or for the Sixers, it'd give Ben a fresh start in a different market and allow the Sixers to bring in somebody maybe who could score or who has been a top-tier point guard in the NBA. That stuff tends to play out based upon what type of decisions the Sixers make on the viability of Ben Simmons as a player they can win with long-term. Joel Embiid came in there clearly determined to win a championship, but his second superstar was not really a superstar, and so probably Tobias Harris was the second-best player on that team. We'll see. These things, look, we saw it with Boston with trading Kemba Walker to OKC. When a team loses, especially in the playoffs, somebody takes a fall, and we haven't seen yet who's going to take the fall in Philly, and maybe nobody does. But I'd say it's a dead 50-50 right now that Ben Simmons opens next season with Philadelphia.
Interesting. Chris Sharon, BasketballNews.com, with us here on SportsMap Radio. Six teams, Chris, still looking for coaches. We're hearing, I know Chauncey Billups is up for a couple of jobs, Jason Kidd's name out there, and then you have Portland interviewing, I guess, for a second time, both Becky Hammond, the San Antonio assistant, and Dawn Staley, the South Carolina coach, two females. What are you hearing about all these coaching rumors going on?
Well, Teresa Weatherspoon's name has been out there, too, so a lot of former WNBA players are out there. Look, Stan Van Gundy's out there as well. He could wind up somewhere. So could Rick Carlisle. So could Scott Brooks. The guys who've been fired since the end of the season, other than Brad Stevens, are all looking for jobs. So, I think Becky Hammond is certainly due. She's put in her time on Pop's staff. She's one of the most highly regarded assistants out there. But, the Bucks have a pretty good assistant as well in Darvin Ham, who's getting interviews around the league. So I think it's going to be a domino thing. Well, the number one candidate out there, I think, right now is either Chauncey Billups or Becky Hammond. And once one of those two gets a job, then the dominoes start to fall. It'll be interesting to see whether Becky does become the first NBA coach. And look, that's a tough job to – tough shoes to fill, but it's a lot of talent out in Portland. He should be replacing Terry Stotts. So these things – they could come by at any moment, but Becky is very highly regarded, and guys who have come off the Spurs bench have always pretty much succeeded in this league or have been well regarded in this league. So once one goes, I think you'll start to see dominoes fall pretty quickly, maybe over the course of the next 3 days.
What would you term the best job to get? I mean, would it be New Orleans with the chance to coach Zion Williamson? Would that be maybe the best situation for someone to go into?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think Portland with Damian Lillard and the talent that they have, CJ McCollum, Jusuf Nurkic, I've got to say that's the number one job to fall into. That was a team that went to the Western Conference Finals a couple of years ago. You know, they're in a stacked, loaded Western Conference, but a different voice is probably what ownership felt they needed. So I got to say that Dallas is the number one job out there. And then, you know, after that, boy, it's hard to say, John. There's been just so much turnover in the coaching ranks in the NBA. It'll be interesting to see who Boston ends up with because, look, with Jaylen Brown back and with Jason Tatum there and Al Horford now back around as well, they were a 500 team last year and they had some chemistry issues between the players and the coaches, but there's a lot of talent there, and can somebody harness that talent and put the Celtics, you know, back where we've gotten used to seeing them over the years? They're always in the playoffs, and yeah, they were there this year, but they weren't all that good. Then the other interesting job that's open is Washington, because look, you get to coach Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal, and Rui Hachimura is not all that bad. They're going to have Thomas Bryant back at center last year or next year after he missed this entire season. So, you know, Washington finished with quite a kick, and you know, I don't think that any team with Russell Westbrook can necessarily be all that bad. So it'll be interesting. And again, I think we're going to see a lot of movement on that front before business closes for the weekend on Friday afternoon.
And one more for you, Chris, because I can't remember a year where there seemed to be less interest in the draft lottery. I know the Pistons win, and that's great, and maybe Cade Cunningham, the guy from Oklahoma State, is on his way there, and maybe he'll be a great player. It just doesn't seem like, you know, I mean, obviously there's no Zion Williamson this year or anyone close to that. Were you hearing that too, that this wasn't just a year where it was that big of a deal to win the lottery?
Yeah, and I think that's a product of you know, people haven't been watching these college players, and they haven't been watching the G League Ignite guys that are going to be going in the lottery as well. Because of the pandemic, you didn't have a buzz, and then scouts weren't really in the arenas to watch these players and disseminating that information to reporters. So, there wasn't a ton of buzz surrounding the lottery, you know, outside of Detroit. Jalen Rose was certainly happy last night. Look, it is what it is. Teams still have to scout, even though they couldn't be in the gyms this year. And this is going to be a draft where you find out which teams have the deepest scouting staffs because, man, you know, other than Cade Cunningham, who's a lock to go number one and really killed it at Oklahoma State, you just don't really have a good idea of how good are the players that are out there because you don't have what you usually have, which is some gossip and chatter about, hey, this guy's damn good and he's a sleeper. I saw him play in at the Euro camp in Italy, in Treviso, or hey, this guy's, you know, killing it because he performed real well at the draft combine. That's coming up this Friday and this weekend in Chicago. So I think you'll see more buzz toward the draft, but you're right. This was not a lottery that had everybody thinking, oh, boy, I can't wait to watch the lottery. And generally that happens more often than not.
No question. Hey, Chris, always good talking to you. We appreciate the time.
All right, Stash. Good to hear your voice again, man.
Take care. Chris Sheridan, BasketballNews.com. He thinks we should not be, you know, it's not a funeral yet for the Clippers. And it's true, they've done it, but they did it with Kawhi. Maybe Kawhi comes back. I mean, and again, we talked about it, how you're not hearing a lot of details about this knee injury. There were rumblings when it first came out that this could be a torn ACL. Well, they haven't said that. So, I mean, maybe Kawhi makes some kind of heroic return. Look, I would agree. If Kawhi plays, yeah, Clippers are still in this series. But the feeling was, all right, it's 2-0 Phoenix, and Chris Paul's coming back and Kawhi isn't. So under that scenario, you have to like the Suns' chances. If it's both of them coming back, that's a whole other ballgame. Take a final timeout and wrap things up on a Wednesday morning coming up on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Here's John Stashower.
In for the vacationing Tony D, wrapping things up on a Wednesday morning. So the playoffs continue tonight. Hockey and hoops get a couple of games. Game one, East Finals, Atlanta, Milwaukee. nobody expected Atlanta to be here. Remember, Atlanta was 14-20, fired the coach. But they did finish the season strong. They really had not that much trouble with the Knicks in the first round. It was a little more dicey against Philadelphia when they lost that game six at home. But they go into Philly and win game seven on the road. They've been terrific on the road. They've won five road playoff games. Trae Young didn't shoot it well the last game, but every other game he's been sensational, especially on the road. So I give it, I mean, I think this will be a very good series. I'm going to give a slight edge to the Bucks, maybe because of home court, but I think this is going to be a good series. And the hockey tonight is Tampa Bay coming off an 8-0 victory in Game 5 at home, now playing Game 6 at the Islanders. You know, the Lightning is what they've done these last 2 years, 13-0 coming off losses. We'll see if the Islanders can rebound after losing 8-0. And if the Islanders lose either this game tonight or the game seven, then this game tonight is the last one at Nassau Coliseum. They've been playing there since 1972. They actually left to go play in Brooklyn, and that was a terrible place to watch hockey. There were, like, obstructed seats, so they went back to Nassau Coliseum. They had a new arena coming next year near Belmont Park, so this may well be the last game at Nassau Coliseum. We'll be back tomorrow morning to talk about it. We'll start things off bright and early at 7 Eastern on Wake Up Calls. Hope you can join us then. Enjoy your Wednesday. I'm John Stashower, Sports Map Radio.